Good evening and thank you for coming. If you join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Simon.
Here.
Vice President Steele.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Pease.
Here.
Director Wiesen.
Here.
Thank you. This brings us to public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the jurisdiction of the board that is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that item is called for discussion. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter, and any clarifying statements will come from the board. Is there any public comment? I'll close public comment. Thank you. Before we go any further, I'm going to pull item G6, I'm sorry. And when Chief Henderson comes up, he will explain to you why. Let's move on to area reports and Sheriff's Office.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
Last month, we had 433 calls for service in the Discovery Bay area. We took 54 police reports, which you can see what's in front of you there. I'm looking over everything. Suspicious circumstances kind of sticks out when you see five of them sitting there, but they're really not much. We just did a report on it. Somebody wrote in a cop logic report for a welfare check. That's one of them. Blocked phone number, making threats on that. And they called in and it was blocked, so we didn't know who was blocking or where everything was recognized. Found a plastic bag with some photo cap dollar bills in it, stuff like that. The assault with deadly weapon, loading, fighting, stuff like that. We did get two arrests out of that. Burglary, residential. It was a residence and a trailer next to it. Looks like the burglary was possibly interrupted. We did find a full location of some stuff that was left on the floor. Somebody did come in and to get something out of the neighbor's shed when they noticed the trailer parked on the side and some other things that back was kind of sacked. The occupants of the home were there at the time, but the homeowner came home and did notice that the window was open and some stuff was there. So that's good thing. The petty theft things that are coming, of course, can't control that. Lock your stuff, put it away. The big thing that sticks out again, and I know I mentioned this last month, was the mailbox thefts. Forced entry into mailboxes and people's getting stolen. They get taken out, either for being delivered or people's not operating. Best advice is to report these vehicles that are running through your neighborhood at slow speeds. Looks like they might be stopping at mailboxes. Call that in. Best description possible. Let our officers get out there and deal with it. The officer can drive right by that car and not know. If you guys see this car, the same car, stopping in front of mailboxes, that gives us the authority to pull that car over and do something about it. I think that's it in a nutshell. Is there anything that sticks out that you might have a question on?
Questions from board?
No.
Public comment?
No.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, so thanks.
Thank you.
Officer Thomas is here from the CHP tonight.
Good afternoon, board.
How are you?
Hello. Officer Thomas with the California High Patrol Contra Costa area, Discovery area out here. Last month, what I was able to get, I was on vacation the month previous, so when I came back, they didn't have all the information that I was supposed to have for me. But what I did get is we had four DUI arrests out here last month. I think one was downtown over here. Right up over here, Main Street, Discovery Bay Boulevard. Yeah.
Oh, it's Riverlane.
Riverlane.
Yeah, is that
the
Shopping
Center? Yeah. It's nice when you're talking, you go blank.
That's all right.
And then we had 31 citations issued out here. Today I tried to get out here sooner, but I ended up having to go to Oregon for some stuff. But I hit that Newport corridor for a while. I wrote like five citations after, 40 out there in that zone. I've been going out on Bixler Road on the other side of Highway 4, like heading out to Excelsior School out here. Issue with with speed out there and on fire, especially during that pickup and drop-off. I was trying to get out here on the Newport for that. I wasn't able to today, probably next week or something like that, maybe Friday I had to get out here or something like that. For the amount of collisions out here, I don't know what collisions took place. They didn't give that information. I'm not aware of anything major as far as the game with the only type collision. But do you guys have anything for me?
How was Labor Day weekend? Pardon? How was Labor Day weekend? How did we do out here with the rest?
Labor Day weekend, I didn't hear anything, but I was gone. I went to the Bodega Bay for a little bit.
How were things in the Bodega Bay?
It was very cool. Great. When I came back Monday, it was like 97 degrees here.
Any questions on the board? Public comment? Come on up, please. We're recording you, that's why I'd like to have in the microphone.
Goodness gracious. On holiday weekends, often we have fireworks going off at various different places, and I'm curious as to whose jurisdiction it is. We're concerned because a lot of pure wooden structures, and by the time night rolls around and people are generally inebriated, we really don't know. I don't think they know what they're doing. And the dogs get scared, and the wife gets scared, and it's just not a very healthy thing.
The jurisdiction on that is predominantly the sheriff handles how the fire department rolls around, does some code enforcement. But I mean, if we see some, we're able to follow it down. You know, we're all cops, so we try to do what we can. But predominantly, if there's an issue like that, just call the sheriff.
Any other questions?
I'd like to thank Officer Thomas for, I sent him an email a couple weeks ago regarding some speeds on a Clipper, and I didn't expect such a timely response, and he replied to me the next day. I think you got five or six that afternoon, the day of the email, and I wanted the reporting party on that was very happy to see you out there, and he emailed me the next day. Thank you for that, so I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much for coming out.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you.
Fire Department, Chief Henderson.
Good evening, Board. I want to start off with an apology. I do not have any pulse stats with me tonight for the month of August. I will try to make out your meeting in the middle of the month and get those out to you, or at least get them out to the general manager so they come across. As I reported to you last month, we were moving forward with a benefit assessment. As you had agendized, you'd already seen that in August 22nd that we had mailed out the ballots, and your ballots, like every other property owner, came across the district. Last Tuesday afternoon, we were contacted regarding somebody's ballot. Didn't look right. It looked like it was a lot less than they'd originally anticipated, so we spent pretty much the whole weekend, the holiday weekend, researching all 34,763 parcels that the ballots had been mailed out to, and we found a fairly significant problem that there was data missing from the areas that the benefit assessment was looking at on everybody's individual property. That impact was about 10,000 parcels total across the district, and where that data fields came in that were missing were in the areas of fire hydrants and road mapping as far as distance to the station. And if you can remember last month when I talked to you about the benefit assessment, we talked about the benefit assessment looked at certain components of everybody's property and what those special benefits would be to that individual property. And some of the big ones were there is how close you were to a fire station, whether there was a fire hydrant there or not, your sprinkler, your house was sprinklered or not. Those were all impacts. By the cause of having 10,000 parcels that were under assessed, that meant the other 34,000 parcels basically were over-assessed. So the board had a special board meeting last night at 6:30. The board accepted staff's recommendation to stopped the ballot process. We will be getting we've already done a press release. We will be sending a notification to every property owner that we have stopped this process. We've already started the process of getting our data correct and refreshed, which will mean the engineer's report will have some minor corrections that will also have to be made in it. And then our plan is to come back out to the parcel owners. You know, it's never an easy thing to stop something or when you find a problem, but this was the only right thing to do across the district as we move forward with it. So I appreciate the board president already pulling that from the agenda tonight. I think that I was here to ask, respectfully ask for that to happen. Our anticipation, if everything falls into place, we hope to, that the ballots will go out right around the last week of October to the first week of November and have this process ended around between the 15th and the 18th of December. So we'll be back again next month with an update and be able to explain more as we work through this process. And I'm available for any questions, which I'm sure there's a few.
Questions? Not so much on the ballot process, but I guess it's the accounting or the consulting group that put together your numbers that kind of stubbed their toe a little bit.
Well, I don't know if we can blame them 100% either. The data was collected from normal agencies that you would get this data from, and the data wasn't 100% correct.
All right.
So, I mean, and you know, when you're missing streets and you're missing fire hydrants,
there's impact. I had a couple questions from residents in reference, and I don't have the answer, but I guess we have, I didn't know, we have a station, Sunset Station or something, where Cal Fire provides service for the district.
We contract an Amador contract during the non-peak fire season or the off season for responses in the Marsh Creek Morgan Territory area with Cal Fire.
Are those firefighters, do they have paramedic training and things similar to the regular East County?
We're a basic life support department, so we do not have any paramedics on duty. They're trained at the same level as we are.
Hmm. Has ever been looked into the, I don't know, if anything ever happened, is that an option that Cal Fire comes in and helps out or does something along that line?
I mean, we use it for mutual aid where when they're in out of fire season, we end up using them for coverage. They're part of our coverage plan of moving things for move-ups. So if we have clients in the district, then we'll move them into the center of the district. So they are like our sixth engine company when we're at a five level. The other thing that I reported last month that took effect on Monday of September 1st that the downtown Broadway station did close on a temporary basis.
Right. In the analysis, I know the staff looked at, well, close this station, close that station, how can we do the best we can do? Was there ever an analysis done about they just having Cal Fire merge Cal Fire totally and East County go away?
In 2006, the district looked at service model alternatives and spent a great amount of time and money and looking from there. In 2013, again, we sent letters out to outside agencies to see if they'd be interested in staffing or providing contractor services. The most recent Cal Fire contract that's out there in the Bay Area right now is done in the community of Morgan Hill. Their cost per station and our cost per station on that contract are within probably a couple $100,000 of each other. At the time, Cal Fire was one of the agencies, along with Tracy, Contra Costa Fire, San Ramon Valley Fire, Stockton Fire, that were all sent the letters, and no agency was interested in looking at a contract for services in 2013.
Thank you.
Kevin, another?
Nope.
No, good luck.
What roughly is going to cost going to be again to send the ballots out again?
To send the ballots back out?
Yeah.
I don't have it exactly in front of me. I want to say the mail, it was about $1 a ballot. So it's about $44,000.
I also apologize for referring to you as the fire department. I should have said East Contra Costa Fire Protection District.
That's fine. We're your fire department.
Is there any public comment? Line up, please.
I was thinking about coming into the historical aspect of this fire department business, but I don't know if it's of any use. But I would like to know when there is a heart attack victim and you call for 911 and ask for an ambulance, why do we get a fire engine out there? They look around and they say, yup, sure enough, we need an ambulance, and about 15 or 20 minutes later, they call an ambulance. Recently, we set up an emergency monitoring system. The monitoring station is in New York, and I had a very hard time explaining to them that no matter what kind of a medical emergency there is, it will be a fire engine that will respond, and we know very well that in cases of certain medical emergencies, every minute counts, particularly in case of a heart attack. So if the fire department is so stretched for money, why are they insisting on controlling all aspects of emergency services? Why can't they just let the ambulance people or the paramedics handle those kind of things and stick to dealing with property-related issues? My understanding is, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but over 90% of all the calls that the fire department answers have nothing to do with fire or property. They are all accidents and other related issues. And yet, we're going to be the ones who are going to be paying for this, and in addition to that, the department has no long-range plans as to living within its means to address the deficits that currently exist. Please.
Let the chief answer.
Pardon? Thank you.
Let's start off with the ambulance response. The fire department is part of the emergency medical system. Each time a 911 call comes in, that call is screened. It's prioritized, whether it's an ambulance only, an ambulance and the fire department, and if the ambulance and the fire department are coming with lights and sirens on. Fire stations are set up to try to be in most emergencies within their community within 10 minutes. Under the current ambulance contract that's set up with Contra Costa County, and ambulance services are contracted with the county, not individual fire districts, Discovery Bay and Bethel Island both have something in common. And part of that contract is that the ambulance company has 16 minutes for response in these areas. As they look at the new RFP process, because it's getting ready to go out, the call volumes show a change in the last 10 years since the last ambulance contract was awarded, that both of these areas need to have the same urban response as any of the other communities in East County, and that should be that 10 to 11 minute response time. So I think you're going to see those changes. But again, it's priority dispatch. If there's a lot of medical emergencies that the fire department do not respond to, that you're getting an ambulance only. But knowing that ambulance only is required to be there in 16 minutes and your fire engine is going to be there hopefully 10 minutes or less.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Chief, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Supervisor of PFO's office, Karen Cornell.
Good evening. A couple things to share with you guys. I'm sure you guys are aware because you are partners in this venture, but we are on phase two of the waterfront signage program, and the applications for this fall order are due on October 15th. I know it's gone out in your newsletter, and it's also posted on your website, but again, we're on round two of those. The Department of Conservation and Development is currently accepting applications for residents of unincorporated Contra Costa County for a seat on the Citizen Advisory Committee for the Transportation Authority. Those applications are due October 10th, and I have a big old packet, well, not big, but a couple pages of information if anyone's interested in applying for that seat. I'm sure everyone's heard the news that there's a delay in the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. Yay, they got so many public comments that they have to work on it some more. So they expect the re-release in early 2015. But there's a couple upcoming events. The Delta Protection Commission is holding a strategic plan workshop on Monday, September 8th in Eielton from 5 to 7. I can get you guys more information on that. We also emailed it out today in our email distribution. And the next event is the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta Conservancy in partnership with the Delta Protection Commission, and are partnering with Bridgestone Tires for a tire recycling event on September 20th from 9 to 12 on Brannan Island. Next, we're working with your general manager to schedule our public works staff to come out. Looks like the October 15th meeting to discuss the Discovery Bay Area Benefit Funds and Needs Assessment Update. Again, those are funds that are collected, and we have a list of projects, roadway projects, that are identified. And lastly, I just want to share with all of you that I have accepted a new job. So this will be my last meeting with you. But it's been a great 8+ years. It would be 9 if I stayed in January. So it's been a long time. I've enjoyed my job and working with the supervisor. I think she's great. Hope you guys do too. But yeah, so I'm out of here.
Congratulations. Where are you going?
Chico State. I'm working in the HR department.
Excellent. Congratulations. Wish you the best.
Thank you.
You've been here a long time.
Good job. Thank you.
Any comments from the board? Any public comment? Karen, thank you very much for
thank you.
Good luck.
Before she leaves, I just want to thank Karen for working with me over the past 4 years. It's been a pleasure. And I know that there's always been issues that have always been not so pleasant. We always seem to get through them.
Exactly. Thank you all.
All right. Take care. Do we have a transplant report tonight? No. County Planning Commission report? Code enforcement?
Yes.
Okay.
I just made a copy of the agenda, and we really had very little. The ongoing problem with the dog lady who's chaining her signs for the, and they basically said there's little to nothing they can do about it, that it needs to go to the sheriff, so, instead of them. And then Rick had brought up about the gentleman that's having the garage sales on Drake's Court every week. And I really don't think they felt they could do anything about that either. So we really didn't.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
They said the Sheriff's Department or the Public Works Department?
No, they said
Department.
Public Works.
Okay. Public Works. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
I hope they get on there.
Do we have a special districts report? Or do we do it? Okay, let's move on to presentations. Capital Improvement Program updates, Rick.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Greg Harris from Herwood Engineering, our district engineer, is here to give you a quarterly update on the projects, our CIP projects, primarily those projects that we financed through the financing back in 2012.
Last April, and what am I telling you now, side by side, so everyone can kind of see
really what's changed and what's going on. Basically, we've had some adjustments. Some things have gone down, some things have gone up. I'll get to the big picture and then we can talk some detail. The big picture is the bottom line. The overage, the total overage that we showed you in April of last year was $748,000. And based upon recent and time spent then, we're currently tracking an overage of about $1 million over the bond money projects. The bond contingency of $300,000 is still unassigned. So, you know, that was money put into the bond for contingency. We're not necessarily using it. Obviously, it makes sense you would use it at some point, but at the moment, it's not assigned anything, so it's on the left. Our fiber project is a final out, actually went down in cost a little bit. There's no change in UV improvements. There was a slight adjustment in the biosolids facility. The two big adjustments occurred in the influent pump station project. There were a few more unknown items. The biggest item is the influent wet well coating was coming off, and we had to stop and issue a change order to replace that coating. And it wasn't cheap. The wall was leaking, we had to plug the wall. It was a problem. But that has now been replaced. And the secondary improvements project, the cost of the PLC panels that are needed for the project have come in higher than was originally budgeted. So those two things total out to get about $250,000. Those are the primary difference between last April and this year. There are some other minor, you know, I consider $10,000 minor or whatever, little hits along the way. But the two big ones are those two items. Then each project is side by side there, and you can kind of look at the difference. Lift station F actually came in on budget. Well, hasn't changed, I should say. It didn't come in on budget, but it hasn't changed since the last time we talked. And we did have a change order on lift station F. So lift station F is mostly done, almost done. But we found that the electrical panel was bad, and current code makes us replace it with a new panel that's higher physically. It has to stand up on a pedestal. Well, that means the wires of PG&E are too short and a bunch of other things, and so it's turned into a change order with PG&E. But we had some contingency in that budget, and it looks like it's going to cover, the contingency is going to cover the change out. So if people ask what's the status of pump station W, it's about 99% there, but we have little items. I'm sorry, F, pump station F. We have a few items to clean up on that. But so that's the update. Any questions?
Questions from the board? Okay. Public comment? No questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
As Greg leaves the podium there, as we start to close out the projects, all the projects are essentially be closed out except for the big one, the solids handling in second place. And once we get a better idea of the numbers, we'll allocate the contingency money and come back to you with the recommendations, whether we use an infrastructure reserve fund to cover the difference which we've been putting away for the past couple of years. We could use that on the station app as well as at the influent pump station and the station that we some rehabilitation projects, or we could use just regular general reserve. So we'll come back to you probably sometime in the next 6 months on that. Maybe two updates out at this point in time.
How much is in the infrastructure reserve fund?
The total budget, there's a multiple different ones. So depending on which one we're referring to, I just know the total has about 2 million.
Okay, let's move on to the consent calendar. Can I get a motion, please? Nobody wants to move approval. A second.
Second.
Any discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Business action items. Item 1, adoption resolution 2014-18, establishing a town of Discovery Bay volunteer policy. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Both Farron and Dan are here tonight to discuss this item, and I believe the next one to follow. Essentially, this is being brought back to the board. It is a policy establishing volunteer rules and regulations and what the roles are that volunteers would be able to play in assisting and augmenting town staff. the attached policy is there for your reading, and if Aaron wants to come on up and get into a little bit more of the specifics.
So we've been working with volunteers in the past, mainly on like a one-day basis with our Earth Day projects. With the purchase of the community center and during the community center committee meetings, it was brought up several times that we really needed to have a policy and start utilizing volunteers. There's pros and cons to both of that. Volunteers aren't free. They do cost money to train. There's background checks. There are workman's comp costs associated with the number of hours we use per year. But they do provide a service, and one that we can utilize, not just at the community center, but throughout other departments in town, whether that be through Virgil's side of the house with interns or rec programs that we're running with kids. So the policies in front of you are not as broad as some other cities that we compared with. We didn't reinvent the wheel. We did go and pull policies from Sacramento, San Jose, our local communities here. We put to compiled points that seem to reflect what we needed right now and the scope of what our volunteer program could be at this point in time.
Did you have any discussions with the city of Brentwood?
Not with their staff, but we did pull whatever documentation we could from Brentwood, Tracy, Sacramento.
Did you guys ever talk to a volunteer coordinator within the cities?
No.
About how many volunteers do you think you're going to anticipate?
Honestly, right now, I don't even have a plan for volunteers. There's not a schedule for volunteers. It's setting the framework so that we can, this is just the start. I mean, this is just basics on what criteria we would need to meet. Again, and before we got into implementing volunteers, we would need to talk more about running the program. At this point in time, we just wanted to be able to, one, accept applications, two, know what rules we needed to abide by accepting those and moving into procedures. This kind of outlines what we as staff need to adhere to as we go into building the program further. As of today, there's not a position that we're opening for a volunteer. It would need to be, we need to sit down and figure out what our needs were, what those job titles would be. It's described in here that we would need to say how many hours, what trainings they would need, get into the details of what the actual job role would be. So there's a lot more work on the program. This is just the very beginning.
Has staff done any, just like a budget number on what it might cost to do the background check and the drug testing and the trainings and all that on it?
Yeah, the background checks run about $50 for us. The drug testing isn't required unless we're going to be letting them drive. That's not a requirement for volunteers. The background check and the TB test are. So most TB tests people can get done for free from their doctor's offices. I know that we have a healthcare service that we send employees to if they don't have health insurance or potential candidates. I think we've done that with one of our recreation consultants, or not consultants, but contractors, I'm sorry. But I'm not sure on the cost of that because most of our TB tests have come free, but background checks is about $50.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that it's, I glanced briefly through, I didn't read every line of the proposal, but I'm surprised to hear that we wouldn't have a drug test. Even if they're not driving, I would think, I would err on the side of caution.
I have no problem adding that clause in there. It wasn't a requirement. By law, it wasn't a requirement. So
I don't know how the rest of the board feels. I certainly think it should be an item.
I'd kind of like to have a special workshop on this whole volunteer topic, and I think this is a good starting point, but I don't think I'm ready tonight to carve through it. It's an org chart, and I don't really understand how the flow would go and who would coordinate the volunteers. Rick, are you the one that would Is it volunteer coordinator guy, or how does that work?
Generally speaking, you would have a volunteer as a volunteer coordinator, or you would have a paid member of the staff as a volunteer coordinator if you have a very robust volunteer program. From the standpoint of an organizational chart, Farron is indicating that this is just the first step in getting the program off the ground. What would come next would be the ability to identify those areas in different areas of the district, whether it be in parks, recreation, landscaping. Here in the office, we've had volunteers in here before. We've had interns working with Virgil and his crews before. And those different needs would determine where they would fall at that particular point in time. Sometimes volunteers just fall in your laps because you get a call from a college student who wants to intern for the summer, and you end up having a place for them and find the spot. Many of the other volunteers are trying to work their way through college programs, and they need to get something resume building, if you will, and they're in the recreation field, and so they would certainly align themselves with those areas. Relative to a volunteer coordinator, once the program got off the ground, there would definitely be a volunteer coordinator, and it would more than likely start out as one of us. But at the end, when it's up and running, those responsibilities would be assigned to a volunteer coordinator, who more than likely would be a volunteer and has some background and experience in that area.
I didn't see any of that proposal, so that's interesting.
The way that it's written right now is that the volunteers are, the department managers are responsible for the volunteer requests that they make. So because we don't have a coordinator, because our program would not be large to kick off with, anybody, like if Virgil wanted to have an intern for the summer, it would be his responsibility to ensure to work with that volunteer, to coordinate his schedule, to provide the trainings, and that is listed in here for the department managers.
Does the volunteer, would this apply to Earth Day when you get 100 people show up and want to help out plant a flower? I mean, they all have to get all these tests. Is this really going to restrict that?
No, the testing is just per specific law. That you're only required to do a background check and the TB testing under certain circumstances. The background would be when you're working with children in a supervisory capacity. The TB testing is, there's like six different things. Like if you're working with food, concessions, public swimming areas, you're going to be working again with kids. So there's a few more triggers with that one, but no. So to answer your question about Earth Day, not the same.
Farron, I would be in favor of moving this forward. I think the groundwork started to do this, but I agree with Bill completely that there should be a drug test if anybody becomes a volunteer.
I don't have any problem with that, yeah.
I was going to mention, Mark, you know, most employer, or not, I'm saying most, but use it has got to be a trigger, like in healthcare, and that you certainly want that. But normally is the behavior such that triggers that. So Brentwood does not. Brentwood Senior Program, the volunteer program there, they have a volunteer coordinator. They do not require a background check or any of the other items that were mentioned here. So,
with respect to the drug tests, it's difficult when you're working with kids many times who have a tendency to be kids, young adults. And so it's really a fine line as to when you perform a drug test or not perform a drug test, and Director Weason is accurate. It is based upon actions of the individual. For example, if we had a college intern here during the summer, I'm not necessarily sure that would be necessary to have that after an interview and after going through the interview process. If that individual has a situation that you question yourself, I just assume get rid of that person and not spend the money on a drug test. Because they're volunteers, and as volunteers, you can release them for no cause. But the areas that I think you're most concerned about are the recreation areas, where there could be problems, and maybe if we're going to add that, maybe that would be the area that that would be added to.
Well, my initial thought was just safety. In other words, if someone is volunteering, they're under influence of drugs, if they trip and fall, now we've got a claim for, you know, workers' comp or who knows whatever. It's more of the safety factor. I don't know what a drug test
I would share that what can be clean today can be dirty tomorrow.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all.
I know, like, our policy for employment, like, if you get in an accident, you get hurt, there's a trigger for a drug test there, and that may be something that we look at with this policy as well.
Well, I'll defer to staff, let them kind of figure it out, knowing that some of the board are concerned about it, so if you can come up with a way that there is something in writing that there's a trigger that would cause that to happen, et cetera, right. I'd be comfortable with that.
I think the thing that Rick said is it depends on what departments they're in.
Right.
I mean, if you got somebody volunteering at the community center who's 65 years old who's supervising a card game,
yeah.
I'm not really thinking that person's going to be.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, it's the kid that comes in who's out by the pool out doing this, who's unsupervised, who's helping us out, who was just smoking a joint on the way to work and knocks somebody over or hurts himself and sues us. And I know you can't profile in this case. So I think all we're concerned about is that we're covered.
You know, the nice thing about policies are when they're board policies and you have the right to change the policy anytime you want. And we, as you know, we brought back some of our recreation policies a number of times as they have migrated over the past year because we're getting better at it. And I would suggest that this is probably a similar thing. We can certainly look at that. If you want us to bring it back with some modified language that would address that, we can certainly do that. You can forward tonight, we can have a workshop if it's the board's desire as well.
I'd just like to do a little more research on as far as the Brentwood senior model works pretty well, and I'd like to see those numbers we talked about. What is the cost to get a volunteer set up, you know, those hard costs? And then I would say that the community center right now and access to the community center, that might be a good primary starting point to get the volunteer program up and running quickly. It doesn't sound like you guys have looked ahead too far as to how you're going to implement or how you want to use this. So I would say if we want to get a community center committee or a forum here or a workshop to talk about the volunteer or the community center, that'd be something I'd like to work on.
Okay, so let's bring this back.
Thanks.
Here was my thought. I think staff is ready to move forward somewhat. My question would be, approximately when do you think you'd be at the next, let's assume for a moment if we did approve this and now you go to your next step, when would you be able to bring something, you know, the more definitive things back to us? Is that a 60-day sure. thing or a 90-day
sure thing? Right now, I mean, even establishing a policy, we get requests from Eagle Scouts to come in and do a volunteer program. Regardless of whether it's a small project or a long-term volunteer, right now we don't have a plan in place for long-term volunteers, people who would be spending an extended amount of time volunteering their services weekly for years. That's what we're missing here. But we still have a need for a policy for those volunteers who walk in, want to do projects for us, have a handbook that helps them out, what our expectations are. That's kind of where we see this starting, and then rolling into the long-term positions and maybe, as Chris suggested, talking about that with the board on where you guys see the need most for the district. You know.
Would you feel comfortable that you'd be in a position in either 60 or 90 days to bring something back to us along that line?
Yeah, I know we have another, we've been meeting with the Community Center Committee. Maybe we could talk about the subcommittee with that a little bit more in detail and figure out what those specific requirements are or what you guys would like to see and bring something back as the long term.
Yeah, I feel comfortable going ahead with this now and then letting staff do the next step and then bringing it back to us, and we can tweak it at that time or have discussions in between time. This allows them to go ahead and make some of the decisions they need to make on the small scale, and then we can work the bigger items out.
Okay, let's do this. Comment.
I just going to make one comment. I just pulled this up. The value of a volunteer in California is $26.34 an hour. So
I'm sorry?
$26.34 an hour is the value of a volunteer in the state of California. So it's certainly, even with the cost of the staff and the training, the outcome still has a positive effect.
Is there any public comment? All right, let's go for it. We have a motion to do ahead here.
I would move that we approve staff recommendation and add that they bring a report back to us on the long-term program in 90 days.
One second. In that case, we're going to carry this over. What's that mean? It didn't go anywhere.
Well, I don't understand that.
We're gonna let them bring it back to us with it whenever they want.
Basically. Well, almost, yeah.
We can certainly bring it back. The desire to get it to you was because we were hoping to get it. It's been one of those projects, and now that the summer is kind of drawn to a close, and this is really starting to gear up for next year.
This is a pretty important resolution.
Let's say that obviously you got a
90 days.
You got a 5-man board, and most of the board didn't feel comfortable going forward with it, which there must be a reason for. So if somebody wants to modify this, or modify the motion, or carry it, we do either one. I don't think anybody wants to do either one. So at this point, we're going to, it's not going to pass, and we're going to bring it back.
Right, so you're letting staff bring it back at their discretion,
which we'd like to see in 90 days.
Okay. Well, within the next 90 days. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably before that.
All right, don't go away.
Well, I'm going to let him get out for the next one.
Okay. G2, adoption resolution 2014-21, establishing alcohol policy at Counter Discovery Bay Recreation Facilities.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. The item before you this evening has to do with the ability to serve and consume and not sell or purchase alcohol at the community center for private parties and events. For example, if someone wanted to have a 30th or 40th birthday party, they would be able to provide food and have beer, wine, or champagne. It does not include spirits or other types of alcoholic beverages. The policy itself would allow renters of the facility and allow us to be able to offer that to the community. It's been something that has been out there, and a lot of people have requested it. And so we wanted to bring back to the board a more formal policy with respect to that. And I know that Dan Mewis has been working on it. And Dan, if you want to come on up and address the board. But one of the key considerations is that alcohol permits will not be issued if the guest of the party is the guest of honor is a minor, or if the majority of the attendees are minors. So for a child's birthday party, for example, you don't want to have alcohol being served at a 10-year-old or 2-year-old's birthday party.
So right now there is no policy set, like Rick just said. I've been getting quite a few calls about people like you and your friends from the community center or the Bowery Barbecue area out back, requests for alcohol, and lately I haven't been able to. I've been telling them that we don't allow alcohol right now, but we'll look into possibly getting a policy. Right now the policy is going to be charged for a permit fee, so we'll be collecting some funds to allow them to be able to drink or serve beer or wine, and hopefully they will, if the policy moves forward and things don't go awry, their deposit will be held come back to us as well. People come, if they drink alcohol without getting the permit and find remnants of that, then we will collect their deposit as well.
Who wants to start?
Well, I have a question based on an email that I received earlier today from the Lions Club. Stated that they were having an event at the community center on September something, a concert, and, or no, excuse me, it was about Oktoberfest, and that they will be providing alcohol as part of their fundraising, and therefore, please do not bring any of your own beverages with you or your own food. All the food should be purchased on site, and that would be an interesting email to receive if, in fact, we don't allow it.
for them, they do have an ABC permit, a one-day permit for the three events they are holding at the community center.
The board at the last meeting approved three events for the Lions Club, which the conditions within those approvals provided for the board authorization to serve alcohol. So by that action, you took the last meeting, you provided that authority.
Proving something that, or making arrangements for something that wasn't approved, didn't realize that. So basically, that was a vote on a specific event that we waived, we created a policy for.
The board has the ability to waive rules that are in place, and that's what the board did. No different than the Great American.
Just wanted to clarify.
Just no different than the Great American Camp Out getting the request to have a camp out of the park.
Spend overnight when typically it'd be a curfew issue, okay.
What is the insurance cost for a applicant? They have to have a certain type of insurance. What does that cost for them?
They will provide that through their homeowner's insurance or through another avenue that they are required to. We have also looked into possibly allowing them to purchase a plan through our insurance as well, but that hasn't moved forward yet.
I could just, from experience, let you know that on an event that's between 100 and 200 people where alcohol is being served but not sold, because that's a whole other issue, it's around $150 for a one-day event. Insurance through any online event, I mean, there's a zillion of them out there you can get it through. It's pretty simple to do, but it does cost around $150.
I think for me, I'm sure I'm a big alone person, this is a recipe for disaster. We do a lot of motorcycle runs in different parks. We were in San Ramon a couple months ago, no booze. The place was packed, it was a great party, they do not allow alcohol. We were in San Jose at the Blessing of the Bikes last year, two parks in San Jose, no booze, they don't allow it. I think allowing booze in at the community center, you get a party started of college kids that are 20, 21, 22 years old, over the legal limit, you got 200 of them in there, or 150 with a swimming pool, with a bunch of drunks, with a mess. I think you're asking for the lost city of the century, and I think having an alcohol policy in our community center is wrong.
One of the things that's included in here is at the discretion of the staff that, depending on the size of the group, that we can require security. And so we can require that they hire security and that the rules are strictly enforced. We have no exception rules in here. I understand exactly what you're saying. There's a number of communities that allow it and some don't. It just depends on how you want to provide service to the community.
Just like when you start with kids, when you got a large crowd, especially when you've got a pool, and you can't, I mean, you're going to say, okay, you got to be over 21, you're going to sneak a certain percentage of them that are under 21, that pretty much happens. And I think you just, if a fight breaks out or something, you get enough drunks in there, I think you're just asking for trouble, and I am dead against it. Any comment?
Something? Yeah, would this also apply to like Cornell Park and the other parks as well, or just at the community
center?
This
is strictly just for the community center right now.
Okay, and then I guess this is a legal question. From a liability standpoint, even though if someone leaves there and is in a car accident afterwards, is there any liability on the part of the town?
It's not your event. They're running them silly.
Okay, thank you.
To address your question regarding Cornell Park, that again is similar to the camp out event. If a group wanted to host and hold an event at Cornell Park, and they did want to serve alcohol, provided free of charge to whoever's attending the event, they would have to come back to this body to get authorization from this board.
You know, just with all due respect to President Simon, you know, we just authorize a organization that draws in people from all different. It's not a private party. The Oktoberfest is a public party, for all intents and purposes. And first of all, let me say, I'm in complete support of the Oktoberfest. This isn't about what they're doing. This is just for example's sake. And I mean, there'd be a greater risk with an event like that than somebody putting on a private party. Because at least with a private party, everybody kind of knows each other. You don't have people coming from all different backgrounds, walks. I mean, they're pretty much a private party. They know each other. It's an invitation. They know each other. They've been invited to it. It's not open in public. It seems to me to be kind of contradictory to allow one
policy on one side, but then not on the other. I don't know. I don't really have a problem with it, to be honest with you.
Most of the events that we're getting these requests for are for people who are having a 40th birthday party, a baby shower, anniversary, things like that. I did have one woman come in asking if they could have their wedding and reception at the community center, and that was another issue there as well.
Yeah, I think that is, we have to have insurance in place. I think that's key, and I think there should be a trigger point as far as you get over 50 or 100. There should be a trigger point, especially if we say, you know, gosh, we're going to need to have a special, you know, secondary view on security or staffing for that special event. And so we just, a management level, but I need to make sure we have insurance in there. And
it is required that they do have their insurance. With no insurance, no, we won't issue the permit. Security will be, we have it in there, suggested with parties over 100 people. We could lower that, you know, as much as you guys would like to, if that would, you know, help push this forward.
And I know, I mean, there's no alcohol in the pool area.
No, yeah, there would be no alcohol in the pool.
Yeah, I mean,
you couldn't rent the pool and have alcohol. That would be a no.
The threshold was 50 attendees, but it could even be lower at the discretion of staff if we felt that the group was, if we felt that there might possibly be a problem, we could require security at our discretion to an even lower level. But basically, 50 was a number. That's about the number for a birthday party for a 30 or 40 or 50 year old or family reunion. Even the a lot of people. I mean, you see the backyard area, the barbecue area. They're packed on weekends. There's certainly more than 50 people there many times, and we don't have any problems. So certainly, the discretionary issue is something that is important here.
So, is your intention to close the community center for a private party?
No, but we get people right now that come out and rent the barbecue area, and we're still open.
You have 40 or 50 people drinking in this section by the barbecues, and another 70 or 80 or 90 people who are swimming and barbecuing and playing out there. Then you have kids everywhere outside. Who's going to police that? Nobody's that good.
Well, then if we come back to it, and if it's over 50 people and we want to say that that's the limit that we need the security, then security will monitor their party.
But that's not what I'm asking you. When you walk back there, like Oktoberfest, when you got a few hundred people back there, how do you know who's at the party? You guys got walking with a can of beer in his hand. Well, I'm at the party. I'm with him.
Well, it's also stated in there, too, that you can, to each party, you are limited to that area. You cannot leave that area with the beverage. So if you have the barbecue area, you cannot go back towards the pool area anywhere in there.
It's a big area. Okay. I hope I don't have to come back and be I told you so. I really don't.
And it was with any of the rooms, too. If they rented a room, then you couldn't leave the room with any alcohol unless all of them fine.
Is there is that a deposit, or is there a higher deposit level for alcohol-related event?
We did not put that in this one, but we could, you know, I thought about it. It's not a bad idea. The fee is actually just the permit fee to allow it, which would just come right back to the business.
There's more wear and tear and trash and all this stuff that it you know, goes along with drinking, so we want to make sure we don't have to, you know, those costs are covered, so.
Any other comment?
There is a fee rental for the facility, and there's a fee for the alcohol permit. Make sure we clarify your question.
Okay. Yeah.
I just want to make sure we answered it. Okay.
You have a comment?
Yes. Will there be, you mentioned that, you know, they can't move from one area to the other if X there's over. But is there going to be a staff member there to ensure that that doesn't happen?
Yes, we will have a staff. We have to pay an extra staff fee for events over 50 people as well.
Okay.
So that's an extra added fee. So there'll be a staff assigned to that party to kind of help monitor it as well.
So if there's 49 people, there'll be no staff.
Is that something that a volunteer could responsibility in the future for monitoring those activities, those events?
It could definitely, you know, we could make a position for that as well. If we had a responsible, you know, person over 21.
Site volunteer or whatever.
Okay. Question, Bill? You had mentioned you had quite a few requests. I had made my notes prior to the meeting as how many requests have we had about serving alcohol. Do you get one a week or one a week?
I would say almost every rental I get, they ask if they can have alcohol.
All right. And how frequent is that?
I mean, we rented, the barbecue area was almost rented either Saturday or Sunday, if not both, the entire summer.
Okay. So a couple of events a week.
during the summer months.
During
Okay. And I am anticipating too, we're going to possibly get Christmas parties and things like that as well.
Right. So you've had, so some groups have decided not to host their event here because they weren't able to.
That has happened
so
as well.
There's a little bit of risk reward. This is a business type of an attitude that if we allow this policy, then we have a better option of keeping the facility fully rented.
And unfortunately, too, even though we haven't had a policy, we tell them no, it still finds its way in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'd rather have a policy and charge for it than what are you going to do if somebody's there?
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. I mean, how many of these partners do we know what's in that cooler? And there's no insurance involved because nobody's saying anything about what's in the cooler
right.
on some of these summer parties. And personally, you know, we've established an unofficial policy already. We've given organizations and other people permission on a one-by-one basis to have alcohol at the community center. This isn't a new policy to us. We've been doing it. The chamber's been given permission to serve wine at their chamber functions. The Lions have been given permission to serve alcohol at their functions. This is not something completely new to what we've done on an individual basis. And I think it will invite the community to participate in the community center building more if we develop a policy that allows for it to happen at the discretion of staff.
I mean, people can still fill out the permit form and everything, and if we feel uncomfortable about them coming in and having alcohol, we can still deny it.
Yeah. So having said that, at this point, I would move that we accept staff's recommendation on this resolution. Oh, go ahead.
Any public comment? Come on up.
I have done large public events in the past at various facilities, and we have always been required to have a very large single event policy, so liability insurance. So homeowners policy no way covers this type of an event. As far as alcohol goes, if you allow one group, you set a precedent, and it will just create hard feelings. So either allow everybody or nobody at all, period. But with the alcohol, you can have a open a Pandora's box. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Any public comment?
So then at this point, I would recommend staff. Make a motion to accept staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
One opposed. Thank you. Okay, let's see. G3.
I didn't want to comment on that, Mr. President. I'm going to get a permit. Adoption resolution number 2014-19, approving an injury and illness prevention program policy for the town of Discovery Bay. Staff? It's the first step in recovery. I'm surprised a lightning bolt didn't come from the ceiling.
Oh, it's coming.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Appreciate your support on that last item. The item before you this evening is called an injury and prevention injury and illness prevention program. It's required through our SDRMA insurance program to have one in place. Number one, number two, I believe it's also required by CalOSHA to have one in place. So we being this board, back in 2008, adopted a resolution in IIPP, and we are recommending that we update that policy, rules of change, requirements of change, and the new IIPP is updated with all the required regulations and complies with California Code of Regulations, Title 8, Section 3203. The program would cover all employees, contractors, and volunteers when we get them. Actually, we would cover them regardless if they were volunteering for something like Earth Day. Much of what is included in the policy is required language through Cal OSHA. This is the first of the policies that you will be seeing coming before you as a result of our contract with UL Safety. They drafted this, we edited it, and made comments and suggestions and that sort of thing, and they were okay with those comments and suggestions. So this is something that every employee has to sign off. They know about this document. They know where it is. It is in a binder. They know where the binder is located in their workstation. It has to be readily accessible to each and every employee. And so this is something that's very important for us. And it's something that we've actually been wanting to update for about the past 2 years. And so we're very happy to be able to bring this forward this evening.
More comment?
Nope.
Anything on here? Public comment? In that case.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Agency comment request. Development plan application DP14-3031, Bolinas Place. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item before you is a development plan application submitted by a resident on Bolinas Place, which is east of Newport, just before you hit Slifer. Across the bridge.
It's next to the water treatment.
The water treatment plant. Anyway, they are looking to merge two lots into one. If you turn to page 65 of your electronic agenda, just slide on down to page 65. This is a site map of the actual location. The home currently sits on lot 25, and they're looking to merge into lot 26. If you scroll down a little bit further to page 71, there's a architectural rendering of what the proposed addition in the pages that follow actually what it's going to look like. This is very similar to what you've seen in the past, and the county is just looking for a comment back from the board.
Public comment?
Why do they have to merge lot lines?
Well, there would be setback requirements on the property lines.
Looks fine to me. You serve liquor over there? He probably does have a place for liquor in here somewhere.
Comment?
No, that covers it. Okay. My curiosity's been fulfilled.
No, that's fine to me.
Public comment? Virgil?
Yeah, the only comment I would make on that, if there's a restriction on can't you use the water and sewer connection that's into the property line on that empty lot unless they come to and access a capacity or fee from the district.
Right.
Excellent point, Virgil. Thank you.
You said they're going to lose a connection?
Well, there is a water and sewer line into that lot already.
Yeah.
So in essence, we will lose that connection fee, but we don't want them connecting to that just because they now group that into one lot.
They're expanding the home. They very well may, and that's an excellent point.
I agree with you, and I think that we should just say it's mandatory to use that sewer hookup because you can't run that sewer line all the way through the existing house.
They've got flow, you know, that goes to the existing.
Right.
That's okay.
I would say that we need to. It would be better for them, or the homeowner in the long term, I believe, and it's better for us.
I would agree that if they use that connection and they pay a connection fee like any
Correct.
Other developer does, but if they don't use that connection, we can't force them to use it or to pay for it.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Why not? We could ask the county to ask.
Why would
you?
How are you going to know they connect or don't connect?
Here.
We would know.
It'd be very obvious. If there's flow going through that pipe, all of a sudden they've connected.
There would be inspections that we would have to perform, that sort of thing.
Well, their plans will show how their plumbing runs also, so that would be the other issue. The plans that have been accepted by the county will show how they plan to hook it up, and if it shows that they're hooking it up there, then we know we've got to get a connection.
Is there a water meter involved in this project?
It will be.
No, not required. Even though this is a giant $1 million project up there? Okay.
It's on this side of town.
Oh.
And it's a remodel.
Would you like them to get a water meter, President Simon?
We should take one over to put it in.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comment? Public comments? If there's no comment, then we'll send our customary letter.
You're sending a customary letter with that condition, right? That if they do connect, that they pick
it. There's no objection to that. Okay. G5, ordinance number 25, establishing emergency drug regulation in the town of Discovery Bay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item has been before you at your last two meetings on August 6th and August 20th. Initially brought to you as a proposed draft ordinance on the 6th and brought back to you as an ordinance still proposed on the 20th of August. At the meeting on the 20th, the board added the requirement or wanted to add in the penalty section a more stringent penalty up to $500. That has been included in the resolution in the ordinance, and it's identified in there that it's up to $500 per day if the violation continues. And also at that meeting, a member of the public addressed the board and indicated that they were constructing new homes in the Lakes subdivision. And then prior to delivering the homes, they pressure wash their driveway sidewalks and walkways up to the home. The other question was they also were requesting a waiver or a variance of some sort that would allow them to install sod in new homes and irrigate that for a period of time. And then after a period of time, that they would revert back to 2 days per week. I did attempt and I did reach the state of California. The gentleman who actually is the go-to guy at the State Water Board on this. His name is Eric Oppenheimer, and Eric was kind enough to respond to me, and I took my email to him and his response and copied it pretty much word for word, so you see what the questions and answers were. With respect to the driveway and the pressure washing, he said if it's only if needed to address a health and safety need. So essentially, if you're doing it for just to clean out your driveway and just to clean up dirt, that the answer would be no. But if it does meet a health and safety need, that they could do it under that scenario. Staff did not recommend a change to the ordinance based on that answer, and so we left that section in place. The second question regarding the sod was answered, and if you read the answer, it's a little almost non-answer, but it would depend on the conservation measures that we have in place, and since we don't have an urban water management plan, we can limit outdoor irrigation to 2 days per week. But if the regulations allow, we don't have any other substitute regulations. So, for example, if there was another project that the board said that the developer or that the town is saving more water in this area because of these measures we put in place, we could then credit, if you will, the developer to be able to do this. Staff did not anticipate that taking place. It did not include that in the proposed ordinance. So other than the change respecting to the increase of the $25 for the first violation, $50 for the second, $100 for the third, and a fine of $500 for a fourth and any subsequent violation, that was the only change that was made to the document that you saw 2 weeks ago and the document you see this evening.
Are you asking us to declare an emergency right now for a water shortage? Is that what you're asking us to do?
We are asking the board to declare a emergency drought regulations ordinance that in the event that a drought that we are required by the state of California to comply with their emergency drought regulations, that we would have emergency drought regulations in place. So the answer to your question is yes.
Anything good? Maria?
I have just one question. I was at an HOA meeting recently, and one of the board members made a comment that they read or heard that the sprinklers could actually run every night as long as they don't run over 7 minutes. I don't know where they picked this up from, but I just wanted to question that.
The language allows for homeowners associations, common area landscapings, not single family, individual residential parks and landscaping, you know, our parks, that we could water 7 days a week because of the size and the number of valves, but we could only irrigate that each valve 2 times per week.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just thinking of ways to maybe help the developer clean his driveway. I'm not sure how you get all the dirt off, and if you got chunks of stuff and you step on it, it's a trip and fall hazard. So that's health and safety. I don't know. Who's going to determine whether it's health and safety? Is it up to the discretion of the owner of the property?
The state of California.
It would be the health and safety at the discretion of the property owner, but I'm certain that we would, if it's a health and safety issue, it's certainly authorized under the law.
Well, I understand that, but trip and fall.
You're going to meet your 20% reduction, and so nobody's going to care.
Right, that's the point. The point is, first of all, we have to put this ordinance in place in order to first and foremost comply with what the state's asking us to do, and then we need to meet our 20% reduction, and it's all moot at that point.
I was going to save this for later, but we got our August numbers yesterday.
This morning,
and for August, from August 2013 to August 2014, that month-to-month, year-to-year comparison, 22% decrease. From July 2014 to August 2014, 17.5% decrease. So this community is taking heed, they're paying attention to it, and I think that they are all aware of the drought that we're in, and the media, whether they're getting it from us or through other methods, internet, TV, radio, newspaper, it is paying off, and we are starting to see some reductions that are significant. I was surprised to see 22% in August. It's been a warm August.
Well, based on what I've heard, people I've talked to, people send me is they give a damn. I mean, people keep saying nobody cares. They do care.
They do.
And people are saying they're squealing on their friends. You know, so
maybe I missed something. If we meet the 20% reduction, then this ordinance that we're imposing doesn't take effect? Or what did I hear there?
No, it absolutely does. Okay. The state wants you to have a 20%, and if we don't reach a 20%, then they can come knocking on our door and say, what have you done to get to 20%? And if you haven't done anything, then we are subject to potential penalties.
Correct. I understand that. So we adopt this. We still meet our 20%, which is fine. Everything's good. Just trying to help.
This brings to mind another question that we've all discussed over the years on regards to some other issues. And hopefully it's pertinent and can be addressed. It comes to mind that if each individual is going to cut down their water consumption, the amount of fees that are being paid for water are going to go down, and we're going to have a tougher time meeting our budget because we're going to have less water being paid for, which will cause us some issue with rates come the next year. Is that something that we should be anticipating and thinking about?
It is the issue with water districts, and it's the issue with conservation all up and down the state and from side to side across the country. You have conservation measures in place, the water districts still have to have the same number of people because we still have to pump water, we still have to have all the same wells or pumping stations, and we have to have all the treatment. And yes, those are issues. I would suspect that we could probably get through this year without an issue. But moving into future years, if we did have a dramatic decrease in revenues, that could play a role in it.
Same issue with gasoline taxes. We've got cars now that don't burn as much gasoline, but you still got to pay Caltrans and do all that, so they raise the tax.
There would be some marginal savings in that we're actually processing less water, so the water that's processed, some marginal savings, but not enough to compensate for. So the irony is, you go into conservation mode and your rates go up.
The good news is, if it rains this winter, all's forgiven.
I don't see anything in here. What we're doing as a town, you know, we're the largest water user for landscaping, so I don't see anything in this ordinance that says what the town's doing. It seems like it's redundant in that the regulations part is already specified in the state document. So why are we making up our own rules when the state already said the prohibition? So why do we
have to educate
we're only watering stations twice a week, even though we're watering public landscape.
This does absolutely apply to us.
Yeah. So what was the calculation? I mean, do we know how much we're saving with our new landscape water plan?
20%.
Yeah, I don't know. Are we saving 20%? You guys should cut it. You cut the time in half. You guys cut the amount of wateries in half. So I just wonder, is this really necessary?
Yeah, this is absolutely necessary. So the state regulations, what they said is if you have an urban water management plan in place, which otherwise includes drought regulation, you didn't have to do this. You don't have that yet. We're working on it now, and you'll have that back before you, which will eliminate this problem. If this problem arises, knock on wood that it doesn't, this problem arises next year. This ordinance applies to all water usage, including residences, including you as a maintenance of landscape areas.
And when does it end? When does this end?
It ends when you say it does, but you're not going to be able to end it until the state otherwise says the regulations. Theirs was an emergency regulation as well.
One thing I would like to point out is that under our consent calendar tonight,
last item.
Is that item three? No.
Item three.
That particular item right there, the reclaimed water project that we approved on consent calendar, is going to save us how much money?
20 million gallons. It's anticipated to save approximately 20 million gallons annually.
That's huge. We approved something tonight that's huge towards water conservation within the district, which is going to help with those people that don't comply, because we've complied in such a large way that we can guarantee we're going to keep we are moving quickly towards not having the state on our back about this. That was a huge thing we did tonight. I know it was on consent calendar and it kind of just got, but that is absolutely a huge plus for us, for Gray Harrison, for our staff to put that program together.
Okay, let's move on. Is there any other comment? Any public comment? Okay, can I get a motion? So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. We're skipping item six. We're moving to item seven. Adoption resolution number 2014-20, establishing supplemental insurance through the HFLAC.
I bet myself today that you would be the first one to do that.
If I did it, I jumped on ahead of it because I knew he was going to do it.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This evening we have before you, this is coming to you as a request of the staff. A couple members of staff have brought this up to my attention. I think we're all familiar with what Aflac does. It's a supplemental insurance program. The nice thing for the district about this program is it is 100% employee funded through payroll. That's the way Aflac runs their program, so that's the way that it works. There's no direct cost to the district. And there would be marginal payroll savings, if you will. I wouldn't count on very many of them, but there would be marginal savings since they're using pre-tax dollars, that the amount of payroll taxes that we pay would be insignificantly reduced. So this evening, I do have representatives of Aflac here to discuss the program if you'd like more to answer any questions. Jim Fitzpatrick and Pauline Simpson are here, and Like I said, this is being brought at the request of the employees, and we've looked into it. They came and presented to staff a few weeks back, and we're bringing it to you tonight for consideration.
All right, well, I'm thinking that we could probably do a condensed version of a presentation. We're all familiar with Aflac.
Well, go ahead. There's no cost impact to the district.
Exactly.
And can't the employees just go get it on their own? Why do they have to have the district set it up?
That's an excellent question. The big advantage is if an individual comes to an Aflac agent to purchase a policy, they're going to pay the direct rate. Three or more under one tax ID, now they have a group rate. It's about a 40% savings, and it makes the protection all that more affordable. So, but it is 100% paid by the individual policy.
With no impact to the district, we're providing another benefit to our employees to take advantage of. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes, that's right.
No more questions.
I just have one comment because I'm very familiar with Aflac. I have it at my union home in Illinois. And sometimes the Aflac reps could get a bit aggressive with the staff, Rick. So can we assure that that won't happen?
I can give you my word on
thank
that,
you.
100%.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I mean, they were very demanding. They wanted to get, you know, they really were pushing the insurance on the staff pretty heavily and wanted to come in when they wanted to come in, even during their work day, and it was quite a problem. So I just want to assure that they're not going to behave in that fashion here.
I can tell you that Jim, when we met with Jim and Pauline a few weeks back, they were nothing but professional.
That's great.
There was definitely no hard sell. In fact, I was the most skeptical person in the room, and they had to convince me, and I was very pleased to see what the program looked like.
Oh, the program is wonderful. I'm just saying that there are times when I experienced that we even have to ask the rep.
That was Chicago.
No, it wasn't. It's Mid-State Illinois.
Watch it.
Same thing. Go. I think it's a nice benefit that works out well it's a win-win for everybody.
Just out of curiosity, probably a hard question to answer, what's the average cost for, let's say, a couple to be involved in the program?
It's in there.
Depends on what policy you're looking at.
It's in here. No, you gave it to me. Okay, forget
and
it.
Then there's a weekly rate sheet in your folder.
Okay, great. Sorry.
That gives you an idea.
I should have looked first. My fault.
Attorney, any other comment? Any public comment? If there are no questions, can I get it? If there are no questions, move staff recommendation. Second?
Second.
Further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, and I'm sorry you had to wait so long to come up tonight.
Thank you very much for your time.
That was the shortest presentation we had of the evening. Okay.
This one should be shorter.
Informational items only. No action necessary. Annual disclosure pursuant to California Government Code Section 53065-5.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This is exactly as the President described it. It is an annual report that is required pursuant to the government code, and that report has to identify members of the board and staff who have been reimbursed for any single event, not a collective event, but a single item of $100 or more. This complies with that, and those members of the staff and board are listed on page 2 of the report.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I have a question, and it's looking at those, if you say single event, I noticed that one of the employees got $1,000 for gas.
That was a single, that manager does not receive an auto allowance and does not have a district vehicle, and she's eligible for mileage reimbursement, and she submitted about 6 months at one time. Okay. And thus it was over $100, and that was the reason why. If they would have been done monthly, it probably would have been there.
Or discussion maybe event, meaning, I think Marianne's going to an event, and your event was submission.
It's a submit, it's once a $100 reimbursement.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Director's comments. Let's start down here. Marianne?
I just have one brief one. Erica stopped by today and left me this information on the 2014 transportation plan. So I have a copy. There's three different pieces of paper here for each of you, and I'll leave the extras.
Okay.
this.
Thank you. Bill, Mr.
President, thank you.
Kevin or Chris?
No.
Kevin?
Stay thirsty, my friend.
Too late. Oh, perfect. Okay, let's move to the manager's report.
I believe, and I believe that Director Graves attended a fire board meeting last night.
I'm sorry, what's the question?
President's report and director's comments.
I did, but Q pretty much, there was a special meeting last night where we discussed and asked many of the questions that Director Peace was asked, and the board was not at all willing to start pointing fingers. But basically, GIS, Global Information System, was supposed to give us the information that we're supposed to have to put this together. Nobody checked it. Now, I don't know if that was the consultants, because nobody was willing to point any fingers last night at the meeting. But what I will tell you is I'm extremely concerned that they're using 10-year-old information. So what happens when they send a truck out if they don't know where the fire hydrants are? And that's the same. It seemed very ludicrous.
They're looking for the blue dot in the street.
And I'm saying, you know what, they get close and they go, oh no, there it is. It's, you know, 300 feet away. We'll just go. I mean, it's probably not that huge of a deal. But it brings up a good point that Contra Costa County is not keeping their GIS plan up to date, and I don't know who's responsible for that, but I believe that it's not this district. I believe that's information that they draw from other agencies, which is what Hugh alluded to get that information. Their mistake might have been the fact that they believed it to be true and used it, you know. But what it has done is created a situation where that uphill battle just ended up a cliff.
Straight up.
Yeah, exactly. It went vertical on them.
Exactly.
And I think that's, we're going to be with three stations until something drastic occurs, in my personal opinion. Thank you, Bill.
General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've got one item. This item is coming to this evening at the request of Director Steele. I believe you brought it up at a past meeting. I know we brought it up prior to that meeting, privately to me. To have a conversation about the expansion of RSOI, our sphere of influence, and our boundary line to the north, south, east, and west, and how that might impact us. And I felt it was appropriate to bring the board for direction. I did have a conversation with Luann Texera with LAFCO on this very subject this week, and her comment was regarding the property to the south, that it is outside what is referred to as the urban limit line at the county, and it would require a vote of the county, the people that live in the county. I'm not sure if that's a local vote or if it's a full countywide vote. They can do up to 30 acres amendment, and so she indicated to me that would be an uphill battle in order for that to happen. The property to our west is ag, and so again, she cautioned that there would possibly be difficulties there. The property in the north, again, most of that property in the north, I think is going to be, if it's not already owned, it's in the process of being purchased by the East Bay Regional Park District. Most of it's farmed right now, but I believe a lot of it is owned by the parks, or is in the process of being owned by the parks. And she said the only property that really would work in that conversation would be the property to our east, which is the Chippewa Ranch property. So I'm looking for direction from the board. If you want to have it send me or send the board member out to LAFCO and have a conversation on this subject, I'd certainly be more than happy to set that up. But at this point in time, I would just need direction from the board.
I was going to say, what was the intent? Well, that was it. You just kind of want to know what was going on. I can make only one comment on the Chiquini property. That is only the only regional part of the area that we might be able to expand to, and that was something that Ben Rover over at Private Island Homes was involved with. And you know, that's such a massive engineering project to remove the peat to get to the good dirt, to then raise it up high enough to be able to construct. That's a massive project.
It was going to be before I ever got on the board. This was the before you, Virgil remembers it well, was the battle in this town that filled the gymnasium four times. The private island homes came out, and they were going to put 3,300 homes in. They were going to put a high school in. They were going to put this in. They're going to put a new marina in. They're going to put a launch ramp in. No change to the roads. We had Caltrans come out. This is back before I was even on the board. We met with Caltrans, and they said, you people are so far on our back burner. There will not be a road improvement out there in the foreseeable future because there's too many other places. So to put 3,300 homes, well, they gave up on it anyway, but to put 3,300 homes in a marina on a two-lane road that has a bridge at one end of a two-lane bridge, historical, it's not going to happen. So, I mean, is there really a reason to pursue this?
No.
Okay. Not to me.
Well, no, it's great information, though.
Yeah.
Appreciate you bringing it back to us.
Exactly.
How much effort, our staff time effort, is it to go through the process to be able to have that in our sphere of influence, even though the project is a major thing?
I'm going to defer that to Rod. He's legal counsel to San Joaquin. It's already in our SOI, but it's not in our boundary. So our boundary line would need to change. There's an entire LAFCO annexation process that would have to take place, and he's your expert.
If you want to know in how much time.
3 minutes or less.
3 minutes. It's an intensive process. You not only have the MSR, which is a municipal services review that goes along with the annexation, but you've got the annexation, you've got the protest hearing that goes along with it, you've got an environmental document that's associated with it, you've got to deal with the county in terms of letting go of particular property that they otherwise receive tax revenues on, you've got a potential tax sharing agreement that goes along with it.
All being produced by Town of Discovery Bay in order to go through this.
That's correct. You're actually the applicant.
You answered my question. Thank you.
Unless the developer came in and wanted to be the applicant, similar to what Pantages and Newport Point are doing.
Correct.
And I know President Simon smiled for a reason.
Tried that once already.
Yeah, you could have a funding agreement where they paid for it. You still remain the applicant. They would just otherwise ask you to be the applicant on their behalf.
Well, we're still in the game if somebody wants to do something with it anyway.
So. Oh, okay.
That's fine. Exactly.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments?
So no direction, but that's it for the time being, and we'll
information.
Thank you very much for your effort. District Legal.
Nothing for me tonight.
Thank you so much. Committee updates, we have nothing. Correspondence, nothing. Public records request, none. Future agenda items. Anything, Marianne?
Yes. The dog park. Is that going to be coming back on?
It was actually scheduled for this agenda. Mm-hmm. And I pulled it from this agenda because I believe I noted to you last week in the letter, I think in the Friday letter under separate cover, I don't recall which, that I received a surprise phone call from the county saying that they are ready to sit down and talk about the park transfer agreement. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they're going to tell us, yay, good news, or it's not going to happen. I have no idea what it's going to be. That meeting is next Tuesday to Wednesday.
That's a staff meeting, or what?
It's a staff meeting, yes. So at that point in time, we will have an idea of what's going to be happening with that, and it'll be held off until we know what's happening at that meeting, but it will be on the next agenda regardless.
Thank you.
The only thing I have, I'd still like to see the P&L statement for the community center.
Yeah, we talked about it at the last staff meeting after the board meeting, and that will be coming back to the board, I believe, at the next.
Just put those.
I'm not sure. I apologize.
Don't we have a monthly statement?
We get a quarterly statement on our how we're doing financially, and we're bringing the year-end statement to you, I believe, in October.
I believe that's right.
I believe it's the second meeting in October. So we're going to combine it with that report.
I would rather, if you're done, go ahead. But
that's fine.
Along the same line, I would like to see a profit and loss, a monthly profit and loss. It's not that hard to do.
Absolutely.
We wrote so many checks, we collected so much revenue. How much did we lose? How much did we win? Very simple.
Dan gave it to us.
Hmm?
Dan, he's the community center guy,
actually. What? He's come from staff.
Yeah,
staff. But it's not as simple. We're not a private business. We receive revenues from Zone 8, we receive revenues, and they all get
But we do have an operating expense for the community center.
And a budget.
We know who's, what staff is assigned to it.
That's right.
We know what it's cost to turn a PG&E on. Mm-hmm. We know what it brought in programs. I mean, there is a cost associated. We've been going through this now for over a year.
And you've seen it on a number of occasions, and it will be coming back to, again, we discussed it at length at our last staff meeting, after this last board meeting, as to how best to provide that. And there's a lot of, it's not as simple as just a profit loss statement.
Why?
Because it's not a profit loss. You don't have, the revenues that we receive don't cover the expenses, and they never will under our scenario. And so the community center is supplemented and augmented with reserves and with Zone 8 operating funds. And so you've got to include those in there too. So if you use those as part of your revenues, that would be really straightforward.
Well, where you're using, we've drained Zone 8. There's nothing.
No, that's not true.
Well, there's very little left in Zone 8 at this point. But
there's always money coming into Zone 8.
Oh, exactly.
It doesn't gets replenished.
But my point is, and it's change the word from profit loss, change it to something else, an operating expense. When you open the doors on the 1st of September, you have a certain amount of expenses in that 31-day period, 30 or 31-day period, and you have a certain amount of revenue that came in actual physical revenue. That's when we first opened that place up, we said, what are we drawing in? Our programs, so the swimming pool, the tennis courts. We need to know. I don't know why you're hyped, why you don't want to.
But Mr. President, this was brought to you as part of the entire budget process that we closed out. We haven't closed out the 12-13 year yet, or 13-14 year. That's coming right now. That's coming back at the next meeting. In order to get that information, it's not as simple as opening up a checkbook or looking at a looking.
Don't
at
you
a
know party. How many checks we wrote last month for the community center, for employees and for PG&E and for whatever else we paid out?
Yes, we do. But what I'm getting at is we also need to know. We have revenues and we have expenses. Okay? The revenues will never match expenses.
Then we're operating at a loss over here. That's what we're trying to find out. We just want to know how big of a loss. That's what we're trying to find out. If we're going backwards every month, we'd like to know how far backwards. Rick, let me put it this way. If you operated the steakhouse, you can call whatever you want, but if you opened up on the 1st of the month and you wrote all the checks,
We presented a number of times in a number of different formats.
But we never presented in this format.
Yes, we did. We provided a profit loss to you.
For a quarter, for a 6 months. Rick, I don't know why you are so dead against doing this.
I am not against doing it.
Then why don't you do it?
We are doing it.
Not by the quarter. Just give us a monthly, what did it take in, what went out. That's all I want to know. That's all we're asking for. And I don't know why you won't give it to us. Dina is our finance director. Are you trying to tell me she can't go into her computer and tell me what she spent last month versus what came in? I don't want to say a quarter or 6 months or a fiscal year. I want to know what we're losing in the community center every month.
Well, it's different every month because it depends on how many people swim in the pool.
Thank you. Give me one every month. Every business gets one every month. We should get one so we know what it's costing us to run a community center.
That's a huge burden on staff and time and the amount of money that's going to cost to do that. Yeah. We don't ask how much we're losing at the plant at plant two every month. How much are we paying out in chemicals at plant two? How much are we paying out in staff at plant two? And how much do we bring into plant two?
That.
We don't ask that on a monthly basis.
We do know that. We know exactly what we're spending on chemicals. We know exactly what we're spending in plant two, plant three.
We know exactly what we're spending at the community center.
No, we don't. I don't have a clue what we're spending at the community center.
How much did we spend in chemicals at plant two last month?
I didn't look to see, but I know, I'm not talking about chemicals.
It's just as available is what I'm saying.
I just want to know, I'm curious, we've opened this thing up, it's not that hard to do a monthly statement. It's just not that tough of a deal.
It's just such a snapshot that doesn't tell you anything.
Should tell you everything. It should tell you everything. You know what you took in and what you gave out. How much we lose.
And that's going to do what?
It's going to tell us where we are, whether we need to tweak things or change things or change programs or add more revenue. It's going to tell us what we're losing. Okay. We know we're talking about spending millions renovating the place and putting our office over there. And if it's already losing money, what's it going to lose then?
I'm not talking about that.
I'm not either, but it's certainly a placeholder.
I don't know who, and I haven't heard any talk about that.
Anyway, let's move on. Okay. Any public records requests?
We do have one, but it hasn't hit you yet. It'll be on the next agenda.
Okay. Future agenda.
It's one of those salary staff requests that we get every year.
It's
another one. It's the same exact thing.
Any other future agenda items? Adjourned.